To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up.
It's Labor Radio. Time is now 5:59 p.m. This is Labor Radio on KBOO 90.7 FM. I'm your host, Nick Bubb. With me here tonight is...
Michael Cathcart.
How are you tonight, Michael?
Doing great. How are you doing, Nick?
Oh, I'm really excited. I'm excited to be here. And we get an extra minute on the show tonight. This is a first.
Very
first
exciting.
Minute, so this is very exciting. Also with us tonight on the phone is Shannon. Shannon, are you there?
I am. Thank you so much for having me, guys.
Oh, thank you so much for being on the show, because one of the things that we love to do around here is talk bad about the Trans-Pacific Partnership.
Yeah,
and
you,
so you're here to talk to us about bad trade kills good jobs, right?
Exactly. And that's exactly what the TPP is it's bad trade policy that is going to lead to job losses here in the United States. I want to go a lot more in depth on that, but I really want to see what you guys have to say. But I will start by saying that that's not only a statement of what the TPP will do, it is also the title of a tour going up and down the West Coast to various congressional representatives' offices to hold rallies with displaced workers, labor leaders, and community leaders. And the tour is coming to the Portland metro area on 10:30 a.m., Monday, June 27th. We're going to be at Representative Bonamici's office in Beaverton. And on Tuesday, June 28th at noon, we're going to be at Representative Earl Blumenauer's office in the Lloyd Center District of Portland, Oregon.
Awesome. We definitely want to support that because these things are a bad deal. And I got to say, I think everybody I know knows that the Trans-Pacific Partnership is a bad deal. It's like trade, another trade agreement. We've seen this song and dance before. This is just going to kill jobs. But I was really young at the time that NAFTA and other things started coming around. Like, what was the sentiment back then? I'm not sure how old you are, but do people know better back then, too? Were they like, no, this trade deal is going to be useless for us, and they passed it anyways, or...
I don't know if this is dating me as much as very specifically dating me, but one of my high school research papers was on NAFTA, the North American Free Toxic Agreement.
Yeah, of course.
So I kind of actually very early in my social change career did brush up against trade and saw it as something that was a place where corporations were starting to exercise their power in new and dangerous ways, particularly back then around environmental policy, and NAFTA did turn out to be a real problem when it came to environmental policy.
Yeah.
And the TPP is just more of the same. But going also back to what you said about the people you're speaking to know the TPP is a bad deal,
yes.
I think that that is true, but it does. But there's a lot of people out there who don't really have a strong feeling about it because it's so big. And I think that's part of the strategy. I think the fact of the matter that when you can get 12 countries encompassing 40% of the global economy to sit down and agree to rules on labor, movement of goods, movement of services, environmental policy, patent law, rules of origin. I could keep going, but now I'm going to start being the guy who makes it too obtuse.
Here's what I see. I mean, it's not only to make rules, it is to rule. That's the impression that I take away from this thing. They want to make their sovereignty absolute and even preemptive to nations' sovereignty.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. And we're seeing that. And specific to that, you've got the investor state dispute settlement mechanism, which is how corporations can sue nation states if they see trade barriers or deleterious effects on their profits. And that's what TransCanada is doing right now over the denial of the Keystone XL pipeline under NAFTA rules.
Yes.
So it already exists, but we're now going to be opening it up to hundreds more corporations across the Pacific Rim.
And that's not right. That's not right at all. And then if they get sued and they lose in this corporate court, if you will, then they have to pay, or else they find themselves just like what was the late president of Argentina that was just ousted?
You may have been talking about Dilma Rousseff in Brazil.
Well, that's Brazil well, but the leader of Argentina, when they had the big debts that came due, she's like, no, we're not going to pay because your terms are absolutely ridiculous. It's usury.
Yep, and that's the one and only time we've seen a country attempt to resist ISDS, punishments is the wrong word, but fines, levies, whatever you want to call them. And like you said, that leader's no longer in power.
Yeah, and I don't think that's accidental. I believe that she was very popular, but they have so much power, these bankers, these greedy corporate people.
Mm-hmm.
And to replace, you know, I mean, ideally they're supposed to be accountable as an elected official, and it doesn't even feel like that anymore because they make decisions that we don't want.
Right.
But when they take away that entirely and leave it in the hands of a corporate court, that is beyond wrong.
Yeah. And that's in essence what Congress did by approving bad past trade deals and giving fast track authority to TPP, as they said, we don't want to be the decision makers anymore, which is not what I voted to put my representative into office to say.
Exactly. Exactly. And so, I mean, this kind of thing, you know, in addition to those rules, this puts our jobs in competition with people that are making the equivalent of 65 cents an hour. Is that right?
That is correct. And I'm going to add on to that to say that the Trans-Pacific Partnership, should it be ratified, which we will not let it be, but should it be, does have a minimum wage requirement. You know what it is?
I'm hoping that you'll tell us.
That there is a minimum wage.
Oh.
That's it?
Meaning a penny a day would allow for a country to be operating under TPP rules if they set their minimum wage at a penny a day.
So as long as there is a minimum set wage, it doesn't matter what that wage is.
No. Now, I understand that there are countries of different sizes and different levels of development across the TPP signatories.
Right.
But not even a formula, not even a guideline, just you have to have one with zero guidance, zero enforceability on what that would, if that could actually be made into a living wage.
That's a pretty big tell, I'd say, on who really benefits from the TPP in general and who did a lot of the writing of it.
I mean,
yeah, like who would put that in there? You know, it wouldn't be workers; it would be the owners, the corporate heads.
Oh, sure, yeah, and then they, of course, they put the requirement for a undefined minimum wage so that they can run around and toot, well, we have minimum wage requirements in this new agreement.
Right, and that is actually, you just nailed one of the United States Trade Representative's talking points, because that is not a requirement that's existed in past free trade deals, which also says something about NAFTA, CAFTA, and the past ones, but they're putting that forward as a great improvement. And when they say it very broadly, people are like, oh, it's better now. But then when you have to dig into the policy to learn that it is not better, and in fact, by putting it in, it's something of a strategy to get more bad policy passed.
I personally am pretty much against anything that has to be so secret that even some congressmen and women can't even see the details of it, except for in a very closed environment, and they can't even take notes.
Right.
Yeah, that doesn't instill much confidence in the voting public when our representatives either can't see it or are barred from telling us about it.
Right.
What could possibly exist in trade that the public shouldn't be aware of?
Exactly.
You know what I mean? I mean, it's just shady, like, backroom deals, the kind of stuff where you think of, like an old group of men from the 20s in their pinstripe mobster suits smoking cigars and figuring out how they're going to, you know, produce their next $1 million of contraband.
It makes you think that scene in The Godfather when they're dividing.
Yeah, exactly.
And I go even further back, and I think about the original Tea Party, because our country was found, one of the founding reasons of our country was a taxation and trade fight.
Mm-hmm. That's true. I mean, this very well may be the catalyst that leads to a larger fight about those issues too, because I know that the president recently came out and said that he plans on signing the Trans-Pacific Partnership.
Well, signing is a very interesting word, and I want to make sure I jump in there because there is a lot of misinformation out there, particularly in February when the Trans-Pacific Partnership was signed in a very ceremonial, all the trade reps from all the countries got together in New Zealand in a casino, because apparently they don't have a public relations team, but that's kind of another story, and they signed it. What that all meant was a very nice ceremony for everyone to get a photo op. It has to be ratified by all legislative bodies of all 12 countries. But they spun the signing ceremony as it being a fait accompli as much and as hard as they could. And I'm still occasionally having conversations with people who are like, well, that's already done now. And it's like, no, it is not.
No, it's not. Yeah, that's another way they get us. They pull the wool over everyone's eyes so they can't see what's going on.
Right.
I mean, that gets back to Nick's original point of, you know, the fact that a lot of people know about the issues and are scared of this, but the vast majority of people are probably completely unaware that this is even on the table or what the TPP involves. And that has a lot to do with the fact that the media refuses to really dive into this issue.
Well, it's because the rich people own the media, too. I mean, one of the things that Mike and I were just talking about before the show was this kind of stuff. And people will blindly pledge their allegiance to a party, but the Democratic Party is not even really a left party anymore by European standards.
No, even by previous American standards, it's a right-wing conservative party by all measures.
But people will vote for them because they've been trained and they've been brought up that this is the party to represent the people, and they've gotten away from their roots.
Yeah, and now that party represents free trade agreements time and time again.
And rich people.
Exactly.
Which brings us to money and politics, which I was one of my closest to my heart issues that isn't trade, but they're also very deeply connected. If we didn't have the money to get these, the massive spending of money to get these corporate-friendly Congress people into office, we wouldn't have zero advocacy against the secret backroom deals that get negotiated.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So you mentioned taxation without representation. I got to give my little plug on that now. I'm in the Steamfitters Union, and so they don't allow the apprentices to vote. And I'm a very big advocate for it because they pay dues. They pay a fee to swear into the union, and then they pay monthly dues, and then they also have a percentage of their income that's given to the union on top of that. But then they're told they're not allowed to vote, and I'm like, this is ridiculous. You know, we went to war. We declared our independence over, you know, things like taxation without
representation.
And of course, I have to say, I'm not knowing much about the structure of your union, I'm also reminiscent of our brothers, sisters, and siblings in D.C. who don't even get a voting representative in the House.
Absolutely.
And yet, yeah, that's the body that runs their city.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, I firmly believe that every citizen should get a vote, period. They shouldn't have to register. They shouldn't have to jump through hoops. You're a citizen. You get to vote. You show up on voting day, you get to vote, period. It gets counted, period.
I am right there with you.
I think that a lot of people are, after this primary season, particularly on the Democratic side, how many issues there were, how many obstacles there were in the way of people actually being able to cast their vote for president. You know,
the trickery, yeah, the treachery, mm-hmm, the shenanigans, giving people provisional ballots, I mean, just to make them feel good. I wasn't even aware at the beginning of this. If somebody handed me a provisional ballot, I'd be like, great, thanks. But thanks to, you know, social media, because the mainstream media, right, will never cover this, I now know that a provisional ballot is garbage. They don't do anything with it. It's like, thanks.
Well, yeah, you're talking to somebody who voted absentee in Florida in 2000, so I think my ballot just went straight to the shredder.
Yeah,
it
no
most
kidding.
Likely did.
It's infuriating.
Yeah, it is. I did want to just quickly talk about the timing of this bad trade kills good jobs.
Yes.
Had you heard about the International Trade Commission report that came out recently?
No.
All right, so this is the report that's mandated by Fast Track. It's a U.S. government report, and it's been mandated for past trade agreements as well. And what's really interesting is it is the body that the government in the past could count on giving them the rosiest possible projections for trade deals. This one actually said that NAFTA would create U.S. jobs, and this body also gave us a report that said the Korea Free Trade Agreement, which is our most recent unilateral agreement, and a complete template for the TPP. The ITC report for that agreement said that it would equalize our trade balance with Korea. Well, we know NAFTA didn't bring the United States jobs, and
no,
we know 4 years into the Korea agreement, our trade imbalance with Korea has grown,
yep,
not shrunk. It has gotten more out of whack under the Korea Free Trade Agreement. When the ITC put out their report about the TPP, I'll preview it by telling you guys something you know. It was released at 4:48 p.m. on a Friday afternoon.
I remember that, yeah.
Yeah, there you go.
Because it's not very rosy.
Oh, no way. So you're telling me that the agency, that their go-to agency, like, don't worry, we're going to really sell this thing for you guys.
Mm-hmm.
It's having a hard time with that.
They're even having a hard time with it.
Exactly. And when Citizen Trade Campaign and Global Trade Watch, my national allies, broke down the numbers by states, we're looking at 95,000 Oregonians working in manufacturing sectors that are projected to see worsening trade deficits.
Mm.
Only just over 500 Oregonians work in the one manufacturing sector expected to see gains, and that's petroleum and coal, which we have to quickly note, how much growth do we want in those industries?
Exactly.
Exactly.
But the top agricultural export for the state of Oregon is wheat. We'll see a decline of exports under the TPP.
Wow.
And forest products will also likely see declines of exports under the Trans-Pacific Partnership. So we're looking at the core of what we have left, I have to be blunt about that, of our manufacturing base here in the state, mm-hmm. but also looking at dangers to our really, not thriving might be a strong word, but strong agricultural and forest service products, we're going to see further declines. And that's the best possible projection the U.S. government can put out.
So this is a really sad state of affairs that we have to stage rallies outside of our representatives' offices just to get them to take us seriously. Or mm-hmm. And who knows if even that'll work. Like, I'm still amazed that the guy from the FCC.
Ted Wheeler.
Yeah, Wheeler.
Or Tom Wheeler.
Yeah, went for the net neutrality. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But, you know, he did, so maybe there's hope.
Yeah, yeah. And, we've had some successes on moving congresspeople, even congresspeople who voted for Fast Track to say no to TPP. One of the most, in the House, one of the most powerful is the ranking Democrat on the House Ways and Means Committee. I brought him up and blanked on his name. He's from Michigan. He's ranking Democrat on Ways and Means. I apologize. He was a... I don't remember his Fast Track vote, but he was very much a target for both pro and anti-TPP lobbyists because he's influential in the party, and he has now come out publicly against the TPP.
Oh, thank goodness.
And one thing specifically to what's going on here in Oregon is that we also want to look at all of the issues that the TPP can impact, and to be perfectly honest with you, Oregon Fair Trade Campaign did a little bit of an experiment on Friday, and we had our first Pride rally. Because a lot of folks don't know, the TPP is going to link us with countries where you can be imprisoned for life for being queer, or you could potentially be stoned to death for being gay or lesbian.
Wow.
And so we really want to get under the skin of our representatives who have voted in favor of good policy, whether it be climate, LGBT rights, economic, but need to be told, unfortunately, that voting for bad trade deals undermines their support of those good issues.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Because when they put money before life,
right,
that's wrong. I mean, nobody should support them.
Right.
Yeah. So you're holding rallies outside of Blumenauer's office as well as Bonamici's office, I believe.
Yeah, give us those times and dates again. There might be people that have tuned in since the last...
I was hoping for that opportunity. Thank you so much. So on Monday the 27th at 10:30 a.m., we're going to be at Representative Bonamici's office in Beaverton. And on Tuesday the 28th at noon, we're going to be at Earl Blumenauer's office in the Lloyd Center District neighborhood of Portland.
You know what sucks? For those of us that work, you know, all the rallies that I would love to go to, it would mean I'd have to miss work to go to them.
That's true.
I wish that politicians were required to have, like, at least one night a month. Mm-hmm. Or a couple nights a month,
evening
even, you know,
hours.
Some evening office hours, because I'd like to show up and you know, throw some tomatoes or whatever.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, you know, I've got something to say to that, but I'm going to do one quick thing more on bad trade. If any of your streaming audience is not in the Portland metro area, this tour is going to Tacoma and several stops in California. And so that information is on our website, on our Facebook, Oregon Fair Trade Campaign, Twitter. Also, just a plain old Google search will find you the entire West Coast tour schedule if you're outside of Portland. But then, Nick, I want to invite you out on Saturday, August 20th. It's a Saturday. Are you working?
Nice. Hopefully not.
All right, good. Because Rock Against the TPP is coming to Portland. This is a national concert tour being put on by Tom Morello's record label. That's Tom of Rage Against the Machine.
Oh, yeah.
Nice.
And so we're going to be having a big anti-TPP concert in downtown Portland on August 20th. Lineup still has yet to be announced. And we're going to be doing some other stuff around it, some teach-ins, maybe a march. We're still in that planning phase. But I expect to see you out because it's on a Saturday. Nick.
Oh man, I'd love to be there. Email me about it.
I will.
I want to keep in touch on this.
All right.
So I think one of the things that would actually, I mean, obviously they want to go to countries where they can get away with having a minimum wage of a penny, or what the research shows, 65 cents an hour.
Mm-hmm.
I think if we did away with that, and this is the next topic that Michael and I are going to talk about, you're welcome to stick around if you want to. We're going to talk about the principle of the basic income guarantee. Have you heard of this one?
I have.
So this is something that I've heard people talking about in light of, you know, machines are taking away our jobs. We got robots now that'll make pretty much anything that we can make. I mean, I'm a welder, and even now machines are doing welds. You know, not all of them yet.
That's coming, though.
But it's coming. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and so the idea is like, well, how do we redistribute wealth when you can't even trade your time for money, which is right. The principle of labor? And so there's an idea of the basic income guarantee, which I thought was maybe like a new principle. So I started digging deeper into it. Martin Luther King Jr. was all for this idea in the 60s,
mm-hmm.
and it predates him by a long time, too. People have been talking about this for a long time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I'm really, I will say, I appreciate the invitation to stick around. I've actually got to get on the phone and call some trade activists in Washington County and invite them to our rally. But
great.
I will say this, it definitely aligns with my values, and I look forward to hearing the conversation.
So what we didn't get, though, is you said we can go to your website if we want more information
yes.
on the Tacoma or California. You didn't give us your website, so let's
oh,
get that.
Sorry. I told you Google search. It's www.OregonFairTrade.org.
Perfect.
Awesome. Well, thank you very much for being on the show. We'll talk to you later.
And thank you so much for having me. You guys have a great rest of your evening.
You as well. Keep the good fight.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right, Michael, it's you and me.
All right, man.
Basic income guarantee. It's big.
It is.
What do you think about it?
I mean, I think, frankly, it's not a radical idea, considering that there are some countries existing in the world right now that are flirting with this idea. I mean, I know that Switzerland just recently had a vote on it. It was voted down, but I don't think it was a very strong mandate by any means. I know that there's, Scandinavian countries have been discussing it for a while. And I also know that it's one of the platform points of the Liberal Party in Canada, which is now in power as of the last election. So this is not
nice.
A out-of-reach radical idea, but rather something that's actually kind of gaining steam at this moment.
So we should keep our eyes on Canada and see what they're doing in this.
That we should.
That's fantastic. I mean, I know you mentioned Scandinavia, and like Sweden's already heading in that direction. They're down to like a 30-hour work week, I think, in some sectors of the government, I believe.
Yeah.
You know, but if that pans out, that'd be awesome if that could spread.
Right. I mean, that was the dream of automation, right, of mechanization, was
right.
that you reduce the amount of labor that is required of humans so that we are freed up to pursue higher callings, right?
Right.
And so why this is just another step in that progress. You know, if we're going to we already have machines taking away our jobs. We already have automation
right.
making certain people's jobs obsolete. So, but we haven't come up with the other side of the equation, which
right.
is providing for those people who have lost their jobs.
Yeah, because I'm all for a machine taking away my job. That's fantastic. As long as that machine doesn't take away my paycheck,
exactly.
I'll call it good.
Exactly. And I mean, this is such not a radical idea that I even read an article that was published very recently in the Wall Street Journal, which, you know, is no, that's no left-wing, you know, crazy anarchist rag or anything like that. That is a very much market-based thinking idea. In fact, Milton Friedman, you know, the father of supply-side economics,
yes.
even proposed the concept of a basic, universal basic income back in the 70s.
I was reading about that, too. He called it a negative income tax.
Yeah, exactly, which is one way to put it, you know?
Right, yeah. So I like, well, some of the people they're talking about the basic income guarantee talk about it as you get a certain minimum amount. And if you make more than that, it phases out. And once you reach a certain threshold, you don't benefit from it at all.
Right.
And then there's other thinking that, well, you know, we don't want to take away people's incentives to work. So we're just going to give them enough. So, you know, worst case scenario, they can buy groceries. They can have their lights turned on. You know, they can buy clothes for their kids, that
yeah.
kind of stuff. And then if they work, that's just gravy on top of it.
Exactly. And I mean, you know, a lot of the arguments, as is the case with so many of these issues, a lot of the arguments against it don't really hold water once you actually start digging into them. Because, you know, the main argument is, well, you provide people with an income without having to work for it. That takes away their incentive to actually find a job. And therefore, you know, they live off the state for the rest of their lives. But the reality is that that's already happening right now. There are
right.
already people in our society who are, you know, whether it's through welfare or other means, are living off of the state without
right.
without returning any sort of labor back to it. So that's not really a viable argument because it's already happening. So we should at least address that and deal with it in a more formal way rather than just sort of letting people fall through the cracks.
You know, I was reading some stuff that during FDR's time when he passed Social Security and some other things, that there was a guarantee. You know, if you did not have the means to feed yourself, you know, if you were that impoverished, the government would provide it for you. And a lot of the stuff was undone under Clinton in 1996.
Right.
You know, that made it more situational. And,
mm-hmm.
and instead of being guaranteed, it was like, well, you must meet certain qualifications.
Right. There's, you know, certain, you know, you obviously, there's a lot of drug testing linked to that stuff now that you can't receive any kind of federal benefit and live in the same space as someone who's, you know, gone to jail or anything like that. And that creates situations where people won't take advantage of these things
speaking of the drug, this is the most amazing thing I've ever read in my life. Speaking of like drug testing, did you see the congresswoman, or was she, I can't remember, she might have been a senator, she proposed for any company that wants a tax break, they have to take a drug test.
Brilliant. The CEO and all the executives,
all of them, bring them
all
in.
I guarantee you they're not passing that drug test.
And the board of directors, you bring them all in. You bring in the Wolf of Wall Street, mm-hmm. if he wants a tax credit.
I love it. And you know, tying that back to what we're talking about here, you know, this would essentially, at least in some of the proposals, would actually do away with things like corporate welfare as well, which I think is, you know, ultimately the goal of where we're trying to go.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I mean, I love the memes going around. I mean, Bernie Sanders' campaign brought a lot of this to light, but you see that the amount of money spent on corporate welfare, you know, it's so far outdoes like human welfare.
Of course.
So far. So I mean, there's probably people listening right now, like, what is corporate welfare, you're thinking? these are tax breaks for corporations. Some of them that make billions of dollars in profit pay nothing in income tax. They pay less than you or me.
And it's tax breaks, and it's the tax code itself, which it was, you know, revised after, you know, the FDR era, to lower substantially the top marginal tax rates. So it's tax breaks. It's also just a rigged tax code, and then it's subsidies provided to certain companies and industries that maybe at this point don't necessarily seem justified. You know, particularly something like the fossil fuel industry is receiving heavy subsidies from our government when they are the most profitable single organizations in the history of mankind.
Yeah. Like the government of Ecuador, you know, they subsidize fuel, but when you go to the pump, you're paying $1.50 for a gallon of gas. Or at least that was the last time I was down there.
Yeah.
You know, so it's a different kind of subsidy instead of just giving huge tax breaks to billionaires.
Right.
It's just a frustrating thing when the money could actually really be used to improve everybody's life. And instead of trickle-down economics, this would actually be a form of trickle-up economics, which really works. When people have money to spend, guess what? They spend it. It's no surprise.
Right, and it's been proven, you know, I believe Shannon was saying this earlier too, but it's been proven that the policies of supply-side economics or trickle-down economics have it's been 30 years. They don't work. We know this now.
It doesn't work.
And so to continue on in these failed approaches is, you know, the definition of insanity.
Yes.
So you want to combat poverty. What better way to do that than provide everyone with guaranteed income, with money to use to, I mean, part of it would have to go towards purchasing health insurance, which is something that we're already forcing people to do without providing with that benefit, with that, you know, monthly check anyways. So it's to go towards things that actually need to be done in people's lives to keep them alive and keep them from turning to crime.
Right. And there's a lot of countries that actually do have one form or another of this in play already. Brazil just recently implemented something. It does require that you have children, and it requires that those children be attending school. But as long as those qualifications are met, and that doesn't seem like huge demands.
It's not a huge hurdle considering it's already compulsory.
The government will give you provisions in order to survive, in order to feed yourself, your kids, in order to get your kid to school.
Yeah.
You know, and it just doesn't seem like rocket science to me. It's like, why aren't we doing this already?
Yeah, and I think there's a fairly clear reason why we aren't doing that, and it has to do a lot with the dominant ideology that runs our economics and our politics right now.
Right. Oh, yeah, because the people that already have money, and they don't want to part with any of it.
Exactly.
You know, I was thinking about it because my brother loves to argue with me on this point. He says there should be no income estate tax. He says there should be no estate tax. He's like, well, that, you know, if I earn money, I'd like to leave it to my kids. I've already paid taxes on it. Why should they have to pay taxes on it again? And I'm like, man, Bill Gates' kids didn't do anything. You know, Bill Gates did something. But the amount of money that they would inherit, just the income that they'd make off their interest on the inheritance in 1 year, is more money than I'll make in my entire lifetime.
Yeah, I feel like we see this time and again, that people who are on the, you know, not necessarily in the top earning brackets make the arguments in for the people who are in those brackets, like, well, I don't want to see something like an estate tax because I may get there someday.
Right.
And once I do get there, once I achieve the American dream, I don't want that to be a burden on me. But the reality is that, yeah, you're not there right now, but you are in a place where you're earning minimum wage, or you're earning,
yes.
you know, you may not be earning enough to keep you afloat.
Yes.
And like, why not address that issue now
yeah.
while you're in it versus planning for some future that may not come?
I know. I want to be like, hey, I love your optimism, but ...
Yeah.
I love the meme that was going around on Facebook. I don't know if you saw this one. There's a guy on the ground with his head on a curb, and there's a big foot in a big boot that's just crunching his head. And the guy is so happy getting squashed, he goes, my foot could be in that boot someday.
That, I think, is the perfect meme to encapsulate the American dream right now.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, I want to make money, too. I want to be able to do my thing. But it's like I tell everybody else, I would be happy to pay a couple extra percent of my income to know that my parents, my neighbors, everybody I know is able to go to the doctor when they're ill. I don't get it.
Yeah.
And, you know, if I had to kick in a little bit so everybody could have a basic income guaranteed, I think that's the best gift that I could leave
Absolutely.
For everyone. Well, I guess we're just about out of time for this week's show.
Yeah.
Thanks, everyone, for tuning in. We're going to see you next week at 6 o'clock.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.